I'll say to this texter, I know you're more comfortable in a world where everyone agrees with you. You surround yourself with people that don't challenge your opinion. I'm not interested in that mindset because it's lazy, unintellectual, and at the end of the day, you're not smarter, you're dumber.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
And happy Wednesday, everybody. Good to be with you on the air, 620 WTMJ. You can find us on YouTube.
Always on YouTube.
You can subscribe to the show on YouTube.
YouTube's Point taken. A good watch, because I can't control my face.
Yeah, you're very readable. Is that the right word? I don't know, probably a better word, but people can tell where you are, one of these, or like, that kind of stuff. I'm probably more like composed.
The thing about watching you is that you're like a squirrel. The amount of times I'm editing videos where I'm talking and I, like, Joe and Bill will be here and I can't even cut to you because you're like clearly not listening to me. You're looking at the time,
I'm doing
you're
stuff.
Looking at the computer,
text
not
line,
paying attention.
Notes.
So you're a little less.
That's what Kathy says about me, like a squirrel.
I think you're undiagnosed ADHD.
Oh, stop. You shouldn't do that. That's not appropriate to diagnose people like that.
I'm saying my thoughts as someone who has it.
Mm-hmm.
I watch your behavior. I watch how you kind of flit from topic to topic.
High performance, though.
How you forget what you're talking about. Yeah, but a lot of ADHD people are high performers.
I'm not saying they're not. I don't diagnose people on the air. All right, so I'm curious about this topic, and it's something that we've sort of touched on before in the era, as I called it in our notes, the hold your nose era of politics. It's more to it than that. And the sort of candidates that are out there, certainly the elected officials that we have to deal with on a daily basis, whether it's in the state or the country, and even the world for that matter, and what it says about the options for voters. It's a fascinating topic.
Because I feel, for the longest time, right, it was like, oh, I could never run for office. I have too many skeletons in my closet. Or
That's not true anymore.
And that's not true anymore, right? As far as there is, and I think it probably started with Trump. As far as, grab him by the pee came out right before the election, and it didn't change anything, right? No. And so all of a sudden we're in a new era of, this is not marriage. This is a representative. And like how much of a role model do you want your elected official versus someone who can win, someone who's good policy, but like accepting that these are imperfect people and how imperfect until it's disqualifying, right? And so we bring this up because we didn't even touch on the Graham Plattner stuff from the weekend, but now locally, yesterday, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel printed a story that said that Francesca Hong, who, for instance, if you believe the polling, is the front runner for Democrats for the race for governor, and that she was sued for nearly $30,000 in debt that she owed to Capital One. And so it was a loss. It was a recent lawsuit, too. This isn't like years ago. This was May 26th in Dade County Circuit Court against Hong, seeking to be repaid for $29,344 she charged on a Discover card since 2011, and she stopped making minimum payments. The campaign spokeswoman has now said that as of June 2nd, the debt was paid off. They asked if that was campaign funds. She said absolutely not. And then this was their, I don't, if you want to call it spin, if you want to call it how they framed it for the campaign. Quote, like 80% of Americans, Representative Hong has debt, specifically from business expenses that rose astronomically during the pandemic. She leads from a place of knowing the endless struggles with bills and the stress that places on families every day. Her policies will help Wisconsin residents develop greater economic stability and success.
Here's my issue with this. One, you're running a campaign. You know this looks bad. You know at some point a smart journalist, an enterprise...
Or a different campaign with opposition is going to feed it. Yeah.
I would actually say if this was a business attributed debt, everybody could understand the pandemic was hard, especially on restaurant owners and people that worked in that area, public facing jobs. But if it's something more than that, now you put yourself in a position, if it's not what you're saying it is, you're essentially...
Well, we don't know.
We
right?
don't
like,
know.
We don't know what if this was personal debt, if it was a combination, because I think a lot of business owners, I know, like
sure.
Mike's an entrepreneur, a lot of stuff goes on his business card. And then sometimes he doesn't have it, and so he puts it on his personal card and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when you own your own business, sometimes like the back and forth between your personal finances and your business finances is not perfect.
Here's my specific question for the campaign, and that can be Francesca Hong or her representatives. How'd you pay it? This debt is from actually goes back farther than the pandemic. So how did you all of a sudden come up with, what was the number?
$29,344.
So you went from not making minimum payments to paying off the debt. How is that possible? What happened? That's a reporter's question. I'm not a journalist.
I'm sure in future forums or interviews.
That's coming up.
But the bigger question specifically of, like, not even specific to Fran Hong, but then we talk about Graham Plattner, who obviously his entire campaign for months now, like the old stuff is the tattoo that he got drunkenly but turned out to be a Nazi symbol.
Skull and crossbones is how he describes
thousands
it.
Thousands of Reddit comments that are clearly from an angry person at the, and he talks about being going through PTSD when he was like living on Reddit like that. And now it came out that his old campaign manager, who had left the campaign right when the campaign started, Graham Plattner's wife had disclosed to her that there was sexting to multiple women that happened early on in their marriage. And it seems like what happened was that that campaign manager left the campaign and then leaked that to the New York Times and Wall Street Journal. And again, another thing that doesn't show great judgment on his part, but also like there's a lot of people who have had affairs or deal with affairs. And it sounds like Washington Post went and interviewed a lot of voters, and there's people who are like not happy about it, but aren't going to change their vote. And then we have the false equivalency of pointing to Texas, and you have a great Ken Paxton, who was actually like been accused of breaking the law, but there's going to be a lot of people who still vote for him. And it's just, at what point does bad decisions, bad behavior become disqualified?
Personal conduct.
Because it seems less and less, I don't know, and like, or how much does it even make people relatable?
That's my thing is, when does it give you pause as a voter to say, whatever it is, whether you're talking about not paying your debts, sexting, Paxton's got like a long list.
Long
I think
list.
You went through them yesterday, the day before.
Last week we went through all the different things.
I mean, a long list of stuff, yet he's the guy that the president has endorsed for the Senate position. Then there's Kirk Bankstead, who didn't get enough signatures. Even though he said he'd be the strongest candidate in the field.
Well, he got enough signatures, but he put the wrong date on a handful. Like for 500 of them, they put the date, because you have to put the general election date on. And so it's like it's a stupid, trivial thing, but like details matter when you're running.
So I guess for the audience, all of you listening, on whether it's on YouTube or over the air or online, it's, what's the line on this stuff? Is it just we just let people be people? No one's perfect. We all admit we all have our flaws, faults. We all do crazy things on occasion. What's the line? Or does it matter anymore?
You know, because then you think about Berrien, and Bill Berrien's campaign just came to a screeching halt once like he had followed like the wrong people on Medium.
Well, because Dan Bice got him.
Yeah.
The late Dan Bice, who we miss every day. All right, we'll take a break here. What do you think? 855-616-1620. What's that line? Or does it matter anymore? How do you make that decision as a voter when you look at some of the conduct of the people running or that are in office? We'll discuss after this. She's Chris and I'm Steve on Point Taken on this Wednesday edition. We're just talking to break. Yeah, it's every candidate has flaws. Every person has flaws. No one is perfect. But when you put yourself out there, one, I applaud people that actually make the effort to run for office, because it's not easy.
Not easy. You open yourself up to all these
everything.
Things being public.
Absolutely.
And then even if you don't win, there's a bunch of stuff that people know about you that they probably wouldn't have had you not run.
Yeah, and in the current environment, even if you win, half the population hates your guts, for all sorts of reasons, most of which have nothing to do with logic or common sense. Lots of texters weighing in. Character matters. Was ambushed by a bunch of Trump voters on a fishing charter in Sitka, Alaska in 2024. They harassed me because I said I wouldn't vote for Trump because of the lack of character. I let them keep going until the end of the hour ride home, then I told them I voted for Haley in the primary and would do so again. I support that Haley choice. I wish she'd stick
you
around.
You had me at Haley.
I wish she'd stick around because we saw the power, at least polling power, she had against Trump. She was always the number two. Trump won, her two. I hope she gets back in, because I would love, as a Republican, for her to be the first woman president. That sends a message to all the Republicans who think Trump is the answer or think the extremism is the answer. She's actually a proven governor and a United Nations ambassador. All right. Do you think age is a factor? Because how you act as a young person versus like an adult? Or a young adult versus
like,
a...
What's your excuse? Well, and that's the thing, right? Because now we have, you know, with J.D. Vance in the White House. And so as we have millennials who basically, starting in college for most of us, had access to uploading our drunken nights on our digital cameras, putting out a Facebook photo album and naming it some stupid, like, 2006 music lyric. So there's way more information for most of us who are millennials that you can tap into. I always joke that if I were to ever run for anything, there is hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of me talking on the radio that some AI LLM is going to be able to run through and find crazy things that I have said over the years. But who knows if that would be disqualified, right? Yes, to a certain extent, you're like, oh, your frontal cortex wasn't, your frontal lobe wasn't fully formed before you were 25. Yeah. We have some excuses for things. But it's also like, does it matter if it's breaking the law? Does it matter if you're cheating? Does it matter on like your financial? Because like we had the same thing with Mandela when he ran for Senate, right? Yeah. As far as property taxes and was it parking tickets?
I asked him at State Fair when he came join me during that campaign, and he got irritated.
And it's like, is this just stupid? Because like I thought about this morning as far as like I've been in debt. Like I made a stupid decision. We'll see if it's stupid or not. But like I had my ex-boyfriend who was not American. I put him on my credit card and to help him build his credit score. And for years, we were paying it off. And then during the pandemic, he put a lot of money on that card. And I was really scared because like, he could just have like gone back to France and not thought about it. He did pay it off. But like, you know, like that, I could have just been saddled with like tens of thousands of dollars of debt because I decided to like trust a boyfriend. And so like stuff like this happens. And
that
so
happens
how much
all the time.
Do you, you know, how much or like medical debt, right? And so it's like, how much do you say like this is a relatable thing versus this is bad for someone who's going to be in charge of the budget? This is a bad sign.
To that point, the texter from the 414, I feel like making personal errors like not paying your bill is a bad choice, a bad look, but doesn't necessarily define you as a person. The way you treat people should. Crimes against other people should almost always disqualify openly insulting and disrespecting others, racism or sexism over lying to the public. Yeah, I mean, we all get that,
well,
right?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I feel like often the conversation around celebrities are not role models because you have like a Taylor Swift or back in the day, Britney Spears of, you know, the impressionable young girls are looking up to you. And so often Miley Cyrus when she was twerking all over the place and being like, I don't want to be a role model. Like, I just want to be myself. But how much should the expectation be that politicians are role models? Or are they just there to carry out the policies that you want to see happen?
I believe in the role model.
They should be the best of us.
They should be, yeah. The brightest, best, and I don't know if we always have that. And
should we pay them more then if we're expecting them to be
probably,
the best of us?
Probably, because for a lot of, I mean, even people see the salaries of members of Congress, they go, wow, that's a lot of money. Actually hasn't gone up in a long time. From the 262, it does matter. Integrity matters. If it doesn't matter to voters, I question their integrity. All of the infractions you've mentioned would be deal breakers to me. If a person can't manage their own life with respect and dignity, they certainly are not capable of managing an office.
Even if you disagree with the policy of the other candidate, right?
Because
it's like,
hold your nose. Yeah, yeah. It's not an easy thing. To the point, though, if we are going to continually relax our standards, if they're not going to be the best and brightest, they're not going to be as clean as possible, as almost perfect as they can be, then should we have any standards at all? Or are we just going into what I would call the reality TV version of politics, which is
speaking of which,
yeah, right.
Spencer Pratt coming in second in the mayor's race in LA yesterday.
Yeah, so
and Steve Hilton, who's not a reality star, but he was a TV host on Fox, right?
Yeah, I you know, whether it's The Rock. Where some of the George Clooney, some of these people, they're going to cross over into politics at some point. Is this, you know, Trump, obviously being Trump, Celebrity Apprentice, that certainly propelled him to the status required so that people in, name a small town in Wisconsin that no one's ever heard of, knew who he was from watching him on TV. Other than that, did they know much about Trump? He's a rich guy. But they knew.
Well, and also, like, he was kind of in decline the years ahead leading into
it reestablished.
Like, he was in debt. Like, it was not like he was crushing it and then took a hiatus to go do the TV show. Like, the TV show revived his persona.
Steve, you're a big fan of Paul Ryan, but even Paul Ryan bowed out after so many years. I've been trying to get Paul on the show for months. He doesn't do a lot of interviews anymore, But I have this running dialogue with his handlers. So if you're listening, I'd love to get him on either the show or the podcast, because I have a lot of respect for him. I've had massive debates over the years about Paul Ryan and what he meant to politics and what his stepping away meant. Bottom line is, he's on the board of Fox.
He's doing fine.
Yeah, he's making more money than he ever made probably as a politician. I just have a lot of respect for him. What do you think? 855-616-1620. We'll take a quick break here on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. A lot of thoughts from all of you on the text line, the Siding Limited WTMJ talk.
It's a good topic.
It is a good topic because we're at this, you know, it's overstated, the crossroads of how the future unfolds in this country. And in my opinion, as an older white male, we've seen a degradation of you know, the rule of law and standards and all this thing, even dress codes and all that. It's a more relaxed society. And I think some of that's playing out in our politicians.
Well, this is a great one from the 715. I think for Dems, I think for both, but he said this person said, I think for Dems, we have to be ready to deal with some level of messy, real people candidates instead of the ivy-born and raised white men who have dominated the party historically. Real people have messy lives because they don't have the money to keep their nose clean and records scrubbed. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, I don't think race has anything to do with it.
Well, so. I think it's more of, if you look at history of who is way overrepresented as our elected officials.
That part's true.
Right? That's a fact. That's not a race thing.
But there's no racial determinant that says you're going to be a bad person or break the law.
No. But I'm just saying, as far as when you look at who we thought could be elected officials for most of our history, it looks different. And now there is a wider range of people that are running for office. I mean, even still, like the representation of working class people for office is way underrepresented versus what the actual demographics are, right? Because it's expensive to run. You have to be able to take time off. Like, there's a lot of barriers to entry to even run that is more affordable for people who already have money.
Money is the big barrier, which speaks to your point. All right, after the break, Tim Sullivan will join us talking about Watertown. If you remember listening to the show, first of all, welcome to Point Taken, Kristen and Steve, on this Wednesday edition. We were talking about the Watertown story. That was hot news for a couple of weeks.
I was so bummed because I was gone the week that the finale to the story happened, when the kids got to perform at the church in Watertown, and they got the original composer to come and conduct. And I was like, I got to watch it while being in Cameron, Wisconsin. I was like, this is such a good ending to this story. It made me very happy, but I didn't get to talk about it on air.
And I can tell you that your Music Doesn't Make You Gay clip still circulating widely on social media.
That's still true. That music does not make you gay.
Still true today. And joining us in studio, Tim Sullivan from Watertown, regional editor at Adams Multimedia, who knows all about this story in exquisite and extensive detail. So, first of all, welcome.
Well, you were on a year ago. Almost exactly.
Yeah. Coincidentally enough, also about the school board in a slightly different context. But yeah, it's great to be back.
So I guess let's set it up for people. There's been massive turnover on that mm-hmm. school board. Not that that's unique. It's happened in a few other districts that I'm aware of, because I'm doing a project on school boards and school districts. But first of all, let's start with the maybe the not so obvious one. Why was there massive turnover on the Watertown school board?
Yeah, so a year ago when we spoke, just over a year ago in the spring nonpartisan elections, there was, I guess you could call it something of a wave election, and a group of really conservative people, and don't get it twisted, this is a really conservative city generally, but there's been a bit more of a balance in the kind of public representation municipally, school board, et cetera. And there was a wave election of a bunch of fairly right-wing people, and then the remaining centrists and or people on the other side of the political spectrum, one after another, I think there were four resignations, and they were replaced by the standing.
Because they were appointed.
Yeah, and the resignations were replaced by people that the right wing essentially of the school board appointed.
And why did they, if you know,
yeah,
or if there was a trend, what was the reason they left?
All of them spoke to us. They spoke to me, and they spoke to my reporter, Ed Zagorski, who does an excellent job covering schools in Watertown. And they said, we were essentially, you can't be forced out from this position, but they felt like they were being, you know, kind of pushed out the door.
Bullied?
Yeah, essentially, I think you could say that that would be a fair way to describe how they were perceiving their treatment by the other members of the school board. And one after another, they resigned. And one of the members of the school board, Diana Johnson, I spoke to really extensively. And she said, look, they are trying to get people who don't have the exact same value system that they do to resign so that they can install people that they want to have on the school board who are very, very aligned with their political viewpoint, which unfortunately is not supposed to be part of these nonpartisan jobs. And Steve, I think last year when I was on here, I said, you served in a nonpartisan role. You understand exactly. Yeah. There, mm-hmm. Certainly some of these issues break down along partisan lines, but for the most part, they are nonpartisan positions for a reason. And the people who were the remaining members of the school board kind of were trying to change that a little bit.
So what do we know as far as the wave of the people who were elected and then now the people that they've subsequently appointed? Like, what is their ideal world when it comes to the Watertown School District of, like, what policies, what are they trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I think there's a couple specific members of the school board who basically have a, you know, Americans for Prosperity or the Charlie Kirk organization. I can't remember.
Points.
Yes. That is kind of their vision of how they want a school board and how they want a school district to operate. Kind of along, again, you know, the national talking points, essentially, in conservative media are the things that these people, and there are a couple of them that have made no secret, they see this as a stepping stone to state political office,
got
to
it.
National
okay.
political office. There's definitely a striving
political ambition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is a means to an end.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so let's fast forward to the most. What are we talking now? A month and a half ago or a month ago? The one, the story about the music.
Not even a month ago.
Not even a month. The piece of music that was not even words, but a piece of music that offended some people because of the origin story of that piece of music.
Yeah, so the school, the orchestra for the school, the teacher for that class is Reed Ledoux. He had chosen a piece of music. They were going to perform it. It is called A Mother of a Revolution. The composer is Omar Thomas, and he ran this past the interim superintendent of the school district. The long-term superintendent is on leave for undisclosed reasons. Mm. The school board has essentially suspended him.
And we don't know why.
They won't reveal it. And I think the realistic thing going on here is that they don't want somebody who can push back against the school board. They want somebody who they can kind of control a little bit. And
that's sort of an interesting strategy because I've been interviewing a lot of school board members, and it's supposed to be a simpatico relationship.
Yeah, and I think the suspended superintendent is a real pro, you know, PhD, Dr. Jared Burke, and they kind of wanted somebody who had a little bit less of a desire to push back on them. And I don't know that for sure, but certainly the tea leaves point in that direction.
I said it when we were talking about this the first time. As far as I know, the instructor followed the policy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They reached out, like they were instructed to do with the policy, to parents. And except for a couple...
Yeah, I think there were three parents that tried to opt out.
Then we actually got corrected that there ended up only being one parent. That after like they got more information, there ended up only being one parent that was opted out.
Yeah, so Reed Ledoux took this to the interim superintendent, and he took it to the school board. Jason Bull is the interim superintendent. Took it to the school board. Took it to the board president, who at the time was Craig Wortman. He is now the vice president or something. After their election in April, they changed their roles and all that, but... and he said, this is fine. We'll move along with this. One of the more zealous members of the school board caught wind of it later. When the people who have more of the partisan viewpoint get a hold of these things, it kind of changes the context in which this all happens.
It also increases turnout at school board meetings.
A lot of these school board meetings, school board meetings typically happen across the street from our office at a very small little office building.
Oh, yeah.
They've all been in the multipurpose area at the high school lately. But once that happened, I think you got things to start breaking down along those partisan lines. And you had the people who were a little bit aggressive about it on the school board who wanted to kind of put their stamp on this and essentially draw a line in the sand for often to get national media not realizing maybe how it would turn out in terms of the perception.
And it is embarrassing. And I know a lot of people in Watertown who were not happy with the coverage. Tim Sullivan joining us, regional editor at Adams Multimedia. Stick around through the break. Lots more to talk about. Watertown School District, a decision that they still rule in many ways. What do we... 4 weeks later. Interesting topic. We'll continue after this. continuing our conversation with Tim Sullivan, regional editor at Adams Multimedia, talking about Watertown. I guess for us who've stepped away for the last few weeks of talking about this story, like, what's the next step here? Is it is this current make of this board, are they interested in changing the policy to an even more strict policy? Is it something else? Is there a dynamic that's shaping their relationship with the members of their district? What's going on there?
Yeah, last time I was on about a year ago, we talked about how some of the people who had been kind of part of this wave, this right-wing wave, had their moment where they realized that they were kind of in it for the wrong reasons and had kind of opened their eyes and been a little bit more reasonable in the time since. And Craig Wortman, who I mentioned previously as essentially approving this when he was still the president of the school board, is one of those people who this kind of decided that he didn't want to play the partisan games and he wanted to show up and do the job like it was supposed to be done. He actually did not appear at the school board meeting where the school board eventually said, we're not going to allow the orchestra to play this piece of music. And the other person who I think is another one who has kind of come around and realized, oh, this is a nonpartisan job. I'm supposed to do this kind of as a pro rather than as a zealot, is Lori Hoffman, who's actually, I believe, still the chair of the Dodge County Republican Party. So this is not a person who has a different partisan leaning, and that's why she's acting appropriately. She was the only one at that meeting who voted against removing the piece from the repertoire. So a couple of them have kind of come around a little bit, and another one before the April election, so not directly involved in the story, kind of stepped down and said, I don't want to have a part of this, and her seat was filled. So I think even from the people on the school board, there's recognition from some corners that, hey, we need to be doing what is best for the students of the school district, not what is best for
our
political aspirations or whatever. Yeah. So even internally, there's a little bit of, I will call it personal growth, I guess.
Yeah.
And then within the community, I think the backlash, essentially, especially because Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Watertown said, this piece is going to be played and you're going to play it at our church. And this is not like one of the progressive churches.
Yeah, this isn't one of the churches that has like all our welcome and like the trans flag hanging outside.
It's not that
outside.
Sort of church. And for them to be the ones to say, this is ridiculous. Let's not play these partisan games. It has shown up basically as an embarrassment. And I don't know how that's going to play in next April's elections, but I do know that it's something that is kind of percolating within the community.
Well, and that's what I found interesting as far as the camaraderie among the students who walked out. Because I imagine, as you said, Watertown is a conservative town, right? And so imagine that when you're young and you're in high school, a lot of, if you have any political beliefs, they usually kind of mirror what your parents are saying at home. And so the fact that there was the walkout of all these students, including athletes and some of the kids that you think maybe wouldn't care about the orchestra that much. And so did that surprise you as far as what the students' reaction was to this?
A little bit. There's certainly something to be said for students saying, oh, let's walk out of school. It's going to be great.
Fair.
Yeah, for the most part, I think this is where you saw Craig and Lori especially say, oh, man, this is really an overstep. And if the students are near universally saying this is ridiculous, don't do this, maybe we've gone too far. Maybe we are trying to kind of impress our values instead of our ability to run an effective school district into this position.
I think I know Watertown pretty well. Been there many times, have friends who live there still. Would you say it's generally a conservative city?
Yes, extremely. Yep.
Okay, so I've heard a lot I get a lot of emails from doing the show. I've heard from a lot of people from this area, and I would say 8 out of 10 were embarrassed by this. Would that be a correct depiction of what you're hearing and seeing?
Yeah. So we run a lot of letters to the editor in our paper generally, and we have run 10 times as many letters to the editor lately as we do on a typical week or a typical month. And I can't recall a single one that was saying, oh, the school board was great. They did the right thing. The only thing that I can think of that kind of falls into that category is Lori Hoffman herself saying, hey, we followed our policies. This is the decision we made. And again, she's the one who voted against this decision to remove the piece anyway. So she's kind of saying, as the president of the school board, I need to stand up for what the school board has done more than saying we did the right thing.
Do you think this will have impacts when they all start to run for reelection?
It could. But at the same time, I think there's also a certain amount of digging in that not only these individuals, these 7 individuals on the school board, but also like the members of the public saying, oh, It's embarrassing to us, but it's the outside world trying to tell Watertown how to be rather than, it's a very insular sort of place, and it's got its idiosyncrasies as all places do, but I think that's one that could, at the very least make it so that not a ton changes electorally.
Interesting.
Next elections, that'll be whatever that is. But on a timeline of this story, anything happening in the near future that would impact, and that's why I asked the policy question, anything like that on the horizon?
I think the thing that people should keep an eye on is the final disposition of Dr. Jared Burke's contract status, because he is somebody who is under contract through 2027, so he has another school year to work, and he's mysteriously on leave as Jason Bull and Sarah Udenhoven, stand in as the interim co-superintendent.
So is this like a Bucks coach situation where they're paying two people to do one job?
Yeah, sort of.
I think so. Dr. Bull, Jason Bull, is the like technology director for the school district, and Sarah Udenhoven is the principal at one of the elementary schools. I don't even necessarily know if they're getting an additional stipend to do an additional job, but
they are paying someone to not work. Right now,
essentially, yes. There's a paid leave situation that is going on,
and as we all know, budgets are very tight.
That's what I mean. Mm.
And this is a school district that one of the things that we spoke about last year was school board members were saying, do not pass this referendum.
Yeah.
And now they came back and universally said, we need to pass the referendum. So there's a
lot
of changes.
Another daily reminder why real journalism matters. I love doing these segments. Tim Sullivan, thanks for reaching out. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course.
We'll wrap the first hour of Point Taken after this on 620 WTMJ. I mentioned it with Tim Sullivan that real journalism matters. And CBS fired a awesome journalist, Scott Pelley.
This is spicy.
It is spicy, but I want to get to it because if you can tell as a listener, I'm at least very, I know you are as well.
We're very pro-journalist.
Yes.
But not journalists.
We're not journalists.
People think
people
think we're journalists. We work in opinion. We do not work as journalists.
That's the distinction about this show. We also try to balance the opinion with both sides, which is also unique. But this one blows me away because I admire Scott Pelley. I've actually had a request to have him on my podcast like a year ago, and he's a busy guy. I mean, he's not going to get.
He didn't get back to you. Maybe he's got
a lot
of free time now. Maybe he'll get back to you now.
But stuff like this matters, in how it shapes what we all know about what our leadership in this country, states, locally are doing. That's why Tim Sullivan matters. That's why the great journalist we had on yesterday,
Caitlin Antimia.
Yeah, tremendous reporting. That's why this stuff matters. And we're going to talk about it next half hour. And I don't want to say this because it bothers me, but are we signaling the end of journalism, real journalism? I hope not.
I say no.
I hope not. I hope you're right. Quick break.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bryan.
Welcome back. The show is, that first hour flew by. All right. I had multiple requests. We had it on the text line. I had people DM me this morning about it, asking if we were going to talk about Scott Pelley being fired from 60 Minutes. And yes, indeed, we both wanted to talk about this. But to get you up to speed, Nick Bilton is the newly installed executive producer of 60 Minutes.
What's his news experience?
Not a lot.
No.
And he was put in place by Barry Weiss. And this is, obviously, we know that there's been multiple, both people exiting by choice, people being replaced. Like, there's been a lot of tumult, both at CBS News and specifically 60 Minutes. And Scott Pelley had reached his limit, it seems like, because not only, he basically let Bilton have it in a public meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would say, I don't know if it's devil's advocate, but like, you can't yell at your boss. You can't like confront your new boss in front of the entire staff and tell him like how inexperienced and unqualified he is for the job. So, you know, Bilton firing him for cause is maybe legitimate, but this is in the context of what's been dismantled at CBS. I think you could understand where Scott Pelley's coming from.
And I would argue that Scott Pelley knew this would happen.
Yeah.
He did it on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's smart enough to figure out things.
And so basically in the statement from Bilton, it was like, quote, this is to Scott Pelley. Yesterday, you hijacked my first meeting with staff to disparage me, my qualifications, and my intentions with remarkable incivility and contempt. Yesterday's performative display of hostility enacted in front of the staff instead of in civil, private conversation demonstrated that you have no interest in contributing to the future success of the show or approaching my new tenure with a mind open to collaboration and progress. Pelley had a different take on the situation.
Yeah, we actually have some audio. Let's cue that up and let's play it.
There was a time when things were worse, You have to go back a little ways. It was 1798. But that's when the Sedition Act was passed, and it was literally codified in law. It was against the law to criticize the federal government or any member of Congress. Editors and reporters went to jail in that period of time for doing their jobs. Fortunately, there was a sunset on that, and 2 years later in the Jefferson administration, it went away. But Madison was asked in 1800 what he thought of the Sedition Act, and he wrote in his letter from Virginia words that I think encapsulate this moment better than just about anything I can imagine. Madison wrote that freedom of the press is the right that guarantees all the others. And I am so honored to be in a room with my colleagues who are working so hard every day, taking risks every day to make sure that right endures.
And I think that's right.
So that wasn't, just to be clear for listeners, that wasn't his statement.
No.
But that was a separate audio you found.
Yeah.
That
he spoke to a group.
Yes. Part of his statement, which I think is pretty shocking, is the part that quote, he said, "For my part, new management has instructed me to inject falsehoods and bias into a politically sensitive story. I've been told to include assertions that are unverified." Like, that's a bold accusation as far
Here's one more. Politicians have been invited to choose correspondents for interviews on their broadcast. I'm old enough to remember 60 Minutes, Mike Wallace, Morley Schaefer? Morley is his first name. Schaefer. It's the gold standard. It was the gold standard for journalism on TV, and everyone looked forward to it. And I still watch 60 Minutes on occasion. But this version is not that. This is, in some ways, a dumbing down of journalism. Barry Weiss, the top CBS executive when it comes to news.
For now.
Scott Bilton. They're not qualified for their positions. This is because of an ownership change.
Nick Bilton.
This is because of an ownership change. The Ellisons, basically, the father and son, own this. CBS Paramount, I believe. This is what's happening. Journalism, real journalism, matters. This is not journalism anymore, and this is not a good development. And as he said in that clip we played, all of our other freedoms exist because of this freedom. And I'm going to keep talking about it because it boggles my mind. There are people in our country who think this recent development is a good thing. How, in what world do you want to be sheltered from real news?
But does it actually? Because I feel like their ratings are going down.
Yeah, they've started to go down because the product isn't as good.
And so that's what I think that's interesting as far as where we are versus we're not at the point, I mean, not that, I mean, we definitely have had journalists have their house searched. We definitely had Don Lemon get arrested. Is there any other cases right now as far as actual journalists getting
fully arrested
in the last 2 years? But there's a difference still between putting cronies and allies in newsrooms that are nice to you. But because of how decentralized our media landscape is now, you still have a choice. As a consumer, you have a choice of where you're going to get your news from. And so if there's enough information out there that, like, you can't trust this to be, if this is turning into Fox News or this is turning into punditry versus actual news, the expectation is consumers have a choice and their ratings would go down and that they would pay for that by losing audience.
I would say the diversity of options you would generally think is a good thing, but when most of those options are crap and politically filtered either way, you're
going to start watching ABC News now.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to watch, but you know, I was talking to you during a break about dropping my screen time to now two plus.
David Muir, beautiful man.
Yeah. For what? In what way?
David Muir?
Looking, you mean?
Very good looking man.
All right. What if
He's also a good journalist.
Never mind.
What if you commented on a woman's look? You don't do that all the time.
I never do that.
Oh, okay.
Except you, because you're my radio co-host. From the text. From the text line, Scott Pelley was a pompous, arrogant, three-letter word beginning with A, ending with SS. Much like me.
Oh.
Scafidi. Yeah. So you're irritated because I'm pointing out why journalism matters, sort of. And if I have a pomposity to my words, get over it. I know that
and yet he listens, or yeah, she listens, depending on who it is.
Yeah, I'll say to this texter, I know you're more comfortable in a world where everyone agrees with you. You surround yourself with people that don't challenge your opinion. I'm not interested in that mindset because it's lazy, unintellectual, and at the end of the day, you're not smarter, you're dumber. Quick break. Scott Pelley out at CBS, 60 Minutes. And, you know, I applaud him, and, you know, I know some people don't like the fact that legacy, that whenever you hear someone say legacy media, that means they don't want to hear the truth. Basically, they want to hear, they want to be pumped full of politics.
Oh, I don't think of legacy when I think of that. I think when people say mainstream media,
yeah, whatever.
That's when they're like, oh, the mainstream media is keeping this from you.
Yeah. And I run into people all day long that spend most of their time, mostly retirees, but watching one channel. It could be MSNBC, it could be CNN, it could be Fox. And so that's sort
it's
of
just the default that's on.
Yeah,
in the background.
It's like a habit of television viewing because you're, I don't want to say too lazy to change the channel, but you get to know the hosts because, as you know, personality often drives interest, right? People listen because they like our personalities. I talk about gardening. You talk about all the crazy stuff you do. Although you're now a hot gardener. You're on it. I cannot wait, by the way, for you to unveil the before and after pictures to our upcoming guest, Melinda Myers. It's spectacular.
Thank you.
Well done, you.
Thank you.
Again, I want to put this on the record. How much help was Mike Sampson in this?
Zero.
Zero help.
Zero help. I think he's carried some bags of mulch.
All right. So he did help somewhat.
But like actual planting.
As he planted a thing.
I don't think he's ever knelt down in our yard.
Come on. That's lazy.
I don't think he's ever.
Did he work through the plans with you?
Absolutely not.
What in the
Absolutely
world?
Absolutely not.
Frankie was probably more help.
Frankie likes watering.
Yeah, see? That's a team effort.
She's pulled a couple out that we have to be like, we keep the plants in the ground.
Yes. Don't yank them.
Don't yank them out. Yeah, and don't step on them.
That's the other thing with little kids, because I have grandkids. Don't pick the beautiful flower that you're looking at, because it's always tempting. They want to pick everything.
That is what I feel bad when I take her to any of the greenhouses with me. Because she's gentle, but she's still, like, she touches the flower like it's like how she pets a dog. Like, she thinks it's really pretty, but I'm like, oh, if you touch that flower, it might die, especially if it's a rose.
No touch. A lot of people saying, applaud me on the comments.
Look, your comeback. Your clapback.
I don't hate the listener. You have your opinion. I have mine. You called me up. I'm going to probably respond
to
it.
But here's my thing with people who engage with us who don't agree with us, which I want to applaud you that you continue to listen to a show where you don't agree with the host.
I'll give them credit for that.
And they feel like they want to engage with us, which is totally, that's what we're here for. But that's why you're listening, right? It's like you're obviously listening because you want to either be challenged or you want to hear a different opinion than what yours is. And that is what is good. Like I went to Rufus King yesterday for more interviews for the documentary. And this is another school that teaches the legislative semester, which I've talked about. And I was talking to the teacher, who's wonderful, Anna Hunter, who brought the legislative semester to Rufus King. And one of the things she talked about, both, and she is like older Gen Z. So we interviewed her both as her experience as a young person and now first a young person teaching young people. And we were just talking about like the emphasis of teaching people how to have productive conversations because they're more interesting. Right. And they like attacking the idea, not attacking the person. And like, it is boring to always agree.
But it makes money. It makes money.
It makes money. But it's just like, whether it is the content you're consuming, the radio shows you listen to, the podcast where you get your news source, whether it's the people in your life, like it is more comfortable to agree, but it is way more boring than to actually be able to articulate both your opinion and seek to understand another opinion instead of immediately shutting down.
Texter asked a question. It's a fair question. What legacy media corporation? Well, what used to be CBS. I had a lot of respect for Scott Pelley and all, and even Anderson Cooper when he did his work on 60 Minutes. Early CNN was something, that's sort of evolved into a yelling match at night with
I know New York Times gets a lot of crap from all sides, but like New York Times, they've figured out a way to continue to be profitable. They do some unbelievable reporting. Their podcasts are good. Like, New York Times is a legacy media that has still figured it out.
And I'll name some names locally here. We've had Mary Spacuzza on the program and Bill Glauber when he was working before he retired and Jeremy Janine from Milwaukee.com. The two amazing female reporters yesterday from the Journal Sentinel who were doing...
Journal Sentinel punches above its weight. And I don't say that just as someone who works there, but as far as like how much local newsrooms have been gutted and how much you can like definitely criticize Gannett as a parent company, but what Milwaukee Journal Sentinel does with the resources they have should not be taken for granted.
And that was sort of where I was going. Given all those challenges, the ownership, the absolute barrage of silly local media attacking
layoffs after layoffs.
To the point where some, including at this station, people refused to say the name Journal Sentinel. They would, the local paper, you know, playing that stupid name game, which it's infantile first, but to grow up, right? So local journalism matters because there's still great reporting being done and you find out things. You think Francesca Hong wanted to have that story reported, but they found out. And if you're someone who says, that's a liberal rag, they just went after the leading candidate in the race for doing something she probably would not want to be made public. That's real journalism, uncomfortable as it is to Francesca Hong or Democrats. Real journalism matters. That's why I'm going to keep saying it. And if you are making money off bashing these organizations, and you live in a world where everything's filtered by politics or talking points or people saying the same thing and everyone nodding in agreement, I don't think you're getting the truth. And that's bad.
Agree.
All right. I love it when you agree with me. Doesn't happen
Look
that
at us.
Often. Look at that.
Look at
Smiling
us.
On a happy on a Wednesday. Quick break.
You can't handle the truth.
Never gets old. You should probably play a Russell Crowe one, too. That's also a good one to go out of that. Yeah, look, I'm not perfect. I don't always know everything about everything, but I will tell you what I think about things. And I think most people at the end of their days or their life would argue that a free press, a freedom of expression and speech is a good thing for a country that sort of is built on that foundational principle. But we're going basically the opposite direction.
Yeah, it's basically the first thing.
Yeah. Also, somebody said you're too rough on your husband. You say a lot of nice things about Mike.
No. My life is infinitely better because of my husband.
Of course.
He's just worthless in the garden. In all other aspects of life, he is invaluable.
He doesn't
get a lot of enjoyment out of yard work.
So I am a big fan in believing in change, changing the status quo. How can we make him a more active participant in your landscape and gardening experience? How can we do that? Do I have to sit down with him?
No, I think he just doesn't. I just don't think it's not his thing.
No, he's got to make it his thing. It's your thing.
I don't think we both have to have the same thing.
Not absolutely, but he lives in that environment. He enjoys what you, hopefully enjoys what you've done.
I mean, he helps pay for it. Does that help?
Yeah. But does he celebrate it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So he's giving you.
He loves it. He loves how good it looks.
Okay.
And
so
he's told me multiple times how proud he is of like what I've done.
So his involvement is praise.
Yeah. Yes. He's involved in both monetarily and appreciation. He's just not down in the dirt with me, which is fine. It's like I'm the one who actually likes getting dirty in there.
Maybe I should mentor him in appreciation of gardening.
You should do that.
Because I have jobs that he could do with me. Now, I run a cemetery. I do all the landscaping. I always need
if
help.
That's what I'm going to do next time he loses a bet to me, it's not going to be that's going to be the bet is that if you lose, you have to go do yard work with Steve at the cemetery.
I bet you we'd enjoy it though.
You'd probably have fun together.
Yeah, we do need to hang because we haven't had a lot of time to do that.
You got to come back from your vacation. We'll find all right. Time.
All right, I asked for it, so we should probably play it.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
You think that's why? I think people come here to hear us tee this stuff up. We've had some great shows recently.
I agree. What I'm really proud of as far as what I can tell from the feedback we get via email, via the text line, via DM, is that I think we have a wide range on the political spectrum of the people who listen to this show. We have people who are very conservative. We have people who are very left, a lot of moderates in between, and they don't agree with either of us all the time.
Yeah.
And that's why they listen.
And thanks for all the like. Thanks for all the nice comments on it. It's not all people that hate my guts. So. I'm putting my fanboy hat on because we have a great guest. She's here to talk about the Enjoy Life Symposium, my friends at Capri Communities that I work with. It's coming up Wednesday, June 10th at the Elmbrook Church, 777 South Barker Road. It's a great day. We had Chef Michael Fecker in studio. Kristen's alongside, by the way, for this interview, even though I'm just going to die.
I'm
going to die.
I'm just alongside.
Michael Fecker is going to be one of the speakers, and the other speaker is Melinda Myers. A lot of people know you as the plant doctor, author of 20 books, which I did not know. And first of all, welcome.
Thank you. It's always great to be here.
I know you do John's show and Julia's show.
Right.
Is it every week? Every
just
Friday?
Once a month. So,
once a month.
Yeah.
You're an expert. And I love the approach you take because we both know, and Kristen does now, it's your life. It's not just planting a flower and then watering it once in a while. It consumes you, right? I mean, you showed Melinda your picture of your before and after of your yard. It's amazing transformation.
It is. In 2 years, it can be done.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, it's not cheap, though. I will say, to do it that quickly, I was not, it's not a cheap venture.
But you also, when you have a smaller space, I lived in the city for quite a few years, and I said you could splurge because you didn't need as many plants.
That's true.
Now I have a bigger space to garden, which is wonderful, but, you know, I have to be a little more careful with the plant budget.
And the magic of gardening and landscaping is it doesn't matter what the space, you could have 5 square meters
yes.
or 5 acres. It's all good, and you can do amazing things in those little spaces.
Oh, you bet. And create, and it's your garden. I was once following a speaker, and her topic was, it's my garden, I don't care what you think. And I thought, what a great idea, because, you know, things that we do, it's our personality.
Yeah.
It's what we cherish and love, and so it's a great way to have that expressed. And, you know, it is my garden. So I don't care what you think.
I love that attitude. It's almost because it's almost like decorating your house, right?
Exactly.
As far as like if you have a bohemian, I think I saw something called like a chaotic garden the other day, and I was like, that's a little where mine is. I was like, I just like want it like all the different flowers. Like, give me everything instead of like a pristine symmetry.
Right. I'm like you. There's nothing level, even or yes.
Yes.
But that gives it character.
It does.
Because if it's too polished, too formal. I mean, there's a place for those kind of gardens.
Right.
We all go to and visit them.
Right.
At least we do.
Right.
But there's the natural piece of it. And that's why I love what you're going to do at the Enjoy Life Symposium, because you're going to make it easier on folks.
You know, and especially the older you get, the easier you want things to be. Plus, even if you're young, protect your joints, protect your skin. But if it's easy, you can do more and it's more fun. You know, if we make it too difficult, and I get a little irritated with people who make it too much of a hardcore science and too difficult, that I'm like, no, make it fun, make it easy. We all have failures. Accept that. That's how you learn. And it's an experiment, but it's a beautiful one.
The failures teach you things. Just
yes.
like in life, gardening, you learn, okay, maybe that's not the right soil conditions. Maybe I watered them too much. All those things are real gardener things that you learn after doing it. Too much shade, not enough sun, all that stuff.
Exactly.
All right, let's bring in Kim Irwin, who joined Chef Michael Fecker. Also, she is the VP of Marketing for Capri Communities and is brilliant in putting these things together. How did you get Melinda Myers?
We were so fortunate, weren't we? I mean, we have quite the lineup at the symposium. We're thrilled. We knew, I mean, just listening to what Melinda just said, our attendees, many, they're retired. They have time. They want beautiful homes. And so Melinda has many topics that would be appealing to our audience, but we thought the easy to maintain beautiful landscaping was going to hit the target.
And I was thinking about this when I was getting ready for the show. You touched on food. Everybody mm-hmm. eats.
Everybody eats.
And most people garden,
right.
or at least landscape, because a lot of people have those kind of situations, their living conditions. That's hitting all the pieces of this story, right?
You bet. Absolutely. And they're both great ways to enjoy life, right? I mean, everyone has a different definition of enjoying life, but most people can agree that they enjoy life outdoors. They enjoy life when they're eating food with friends and family. So they both really were perfect fits.
All right. So full disclosure, we're gonna pitch your great event in a second, but we're gonna ask Melinda some gardening questions. I have a bunch.
I
don't think frankly there's
wait.
Enough
what's
time
the squirrel question that you have? I don't
well,
know.
You'll find out. The squirrels affect landscaping and gardening in
yes.
a big way. So you haven't learned
what's
that.
What's worse, a squirrel or a bunny?
They're both bad.
A bunny. Yes.
They're amazing.
I was gonna say it's a toss up in my yard.
Kim Irwin. Tell us about the Enjoy Life Symposium in 30 seconds or less.
You got it. It is on Wednesday, June 10th at Elmbrook Church. It is targeted for adults 55 plus. We have speakers like Melinda and Chef Fecker. We have a fashion show. We have 50 Enjoy Life exhibitors, educational breakout sessions, music, food, performances by the Dancing Grannies, the Golden Gals, the Ukuleles. We have it all. The Bucks Grand Dancers, they'll all be there.
Wow.
The Humane Society will be there. We have food and raffles, and it'll be a lot of fun.
I got to go 2 years ago. It was
yes.
It was the attendance was amazing as far as how many people showed up. Like it was a very good vibe.
We've broken a record this year.
I would go, but I'll be in the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah. So. I think you have a good excuse, Steve. But next year,
next year I will definitely be.
Bring
there.
Bring him
right.
in to talk about the beauty of being able to go on as many vacations as you want.
He can be our
retire.
Vacation expert.
All right.
That's enjoying.
Melinda
life.
Myers, Kim Irwin, lots more conversation. We're going to talk some. Landscaping, gardening questions, and the squirrel question or the bunny question after this. I am a fanboy for this half hour because Melinda Myers is joining us and Kim Irwin, Vice President of Marketing for Capri Communities, a huge event. You can find out about it. By the way, it's free, Kim.
Free event.
EnjoyLifeSymposium.com.
Yes, we want people to pre-register.
Wednesday, June 10th, 8:30 to 3, Elmbrook Church on 777 South Barker Road. Now, we're going to geek out and talk about gardening stuff. I asked the squirrel question. So I live in a neighborhood with mature trees. Squirrels are some people feed squirrels. I have neighbors that do that. But they're a pest to me because they're digging up my stuff. What's your solution to that problem?
So I have to tell you, I just noticed they're digging up my tulip bulbs. Yes, I plant tulips.
Are they eating these things?
Yes, they are.
I had 50 bulbs and I got two tulips.
Right. And so usually I think of them as being a problem in the fall when you plant. But because it's so dry, their food is a little scarcer. I just saw some holes. So I work with, I always like to disclose, Plant Skid, which is an organic, grain-resistant animal repellent. Works on gray squirrels, chipmunks, things that are
plant Skid?
S-K-Y-D-D.
Okay.
And it's organic and it's rain-resistant, so you don't have to reapply it. And I've had really good success with it. But, you know, like anything, if you can do it before they start feeding, you're always better off. Or as soon as you notice the damage.
So what, you just put it in the soil?
So there's granular. So for the squirrels, I put it right around my bulbs. I'll put it around my edible plants. If I have, I have my garden fenced in where I grow my vegetables. But the other plants, like my tulips that are outside, and they have a liquid you can spray on for things that are eating higher up.
Is it true that marigolds actually repel some? That's an urban legend?
A garden legend. I did some work at Summerfest years ago when the kids would come in and plant, and I got a call the next day. All those marigolds, they ate all the flowers off. So you've obviously...
Yeah. They're easy to grow. Every year I take the seeds, and then into my greenhouse, I sprinkle the seeds, and I get free marigolds, and I have
but
some...
But you're not using them to try to repel animals.
No. Well... I'm in a greenhouse, so I don't have to worry about it.
You just close the door.
As much as you can. As much as you can, right?
Because things can sneak in.
All right, the other thing is, I have a miniature, like, Japanese garden. So I have, obviously, Japanese maple, hostas, potted hostas, which is unique for me. Learned that on a gardening show. But I need shade, other than coleus, I need a shade-loving plant to sort of highlight that has some color, some spikes. What would that be?
Well, I really like the angel wing begonias, things like dragon wing, the big whopper. They'll take sun, they'll take shade. They're low maintenance, they're free flowering. You don't have to deadhead them. My kind of plant. Browalia, not used a lot. White or blue flowers, and it's probably about 12 inches tall, very shade tolerant. So if you want some blue in there, it works great. Those are some of my favorite of the shade colors. Spike plants. I know everybody's like, oh, everybody grows spike, but there's so many new cultivars. The more colorful, the more sun that they do.
Wander
like.
Through a nursery. It's amazing now.
Yes.
Because it used to be not like that.
Right.
20 years ago, not that
what
variety.
What do you mean by spike plants?
It shoots
cordeline,
up a spike.
People would have it in the middle of their container. You may be too young. The old-fashioned way was geraniums, Dusty Miller, vinca vine, and a spike in the middle.
I think I still do that.
Okay. So I just had to set the it's one of those where you go, oh, I hate spike. But now there's so many cool new cultivars that are so good.
What about a stilbe or A-S-T-I-L-B-E?
Those are great perennials. I was thinking annuals, but you're right, a stilbe.
Those are hard to find because that's what I was actually trying to find, and I didn't know, like, a Home Depot, a lot of the greenhouses I've been.
Looking perennials, though, not an annual.
Right.
I know, yes. But I still couldn't really find them, so I don't know if there's a place that you feel like usually has them in stock.
Well, I work with Ebert, so I always like to disclose. So I'm a little biased, but they have a wide selection.
Okay.
But going to a nursery or garden center that is more focused on a gardening than on big box kind of things, home repair. So a stilbe is wonderful, likes moisture. One of my favorite is Epimedium. It's a great ground cover. So you know that one with seasonal interest. Brunera, which is Siberian bug loss.
How weird is it that I know these?
I know. I'm watching your head. I'm like, I don't even need to describe this to you.
My wife, Kathy, goes, are you watching another gardening show?
Well, they're so exciting.
It's addictive.
It is. And you could get such great ideas and then translate what you like. Pick what you like from them. You know, Virginia pig squeak, you squeak the leaves. It sounds like a pig squeaking. So when I was teaching at MATC, I made my students do all that goofy stuff. And they're like, oh, we're going out with Melinda again.
All right, Kim. So you hit a home run on your speakers for this event. JoyLifeSymposium.com. Fecker on food. Oh. Melinda on everything
gardening.
Outdoors.
Melinda opens the show. She's at 9:30.
Oh, headliner, they used to call
Woo-hoo.
That.
Right.
Yeah. So how excited are you about the event?
I'm so excited. We've broken attendance records. We are hoping to have a very beautiful day. And really, it's just great to watch people come through the door and have so much fun, however they choose to make their day, right? They should check out the agenda, go online, enjoylifesymposium.com.
And free.
See what they want to do. And it's free.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's why when you told me this, because we were recording something for, I think, Sunday Sip or something.
Yes.
And you said you have Fecker and Myers. I go, oh my God, that's like the best.
He's going to skip the show. Oh, no, you're not going to be here. Normally, if he was in town, he'd just skip the show to go.
Like, you're generous.
All right.
So you're too young for this. You stay here.
Melinda, let's keep in touch.
I would love to.
I have so many questions for you.
And I'm going to kind of pick your brain about the greenhouse as we put it up. So yeah.
Or maybe just hire you. Maybe you can do it pro bono.
I've done two of them. I have skills now.
Okay.
Kim Irwin, Vice President of Marketing, Capri Communities. You're a great partner. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, Kristen.
Melinda, you already know how awesome you are. So thanks for being here. We'll be
both.
Keep in touch. Kristen and Steve will wrap it up after this on 620 WTMJ. I absolutely love spending time with Melinda Myers and Kim Irwin. She's so fun to work with. I've done a lot of stuff with Capri in the last year, and I'll be doing more with them, including right after one of our State Fair shows. I'm emceeing a big event at State Fair for Capri Communities.
Has Melinda been on your outdoor show?
No. But I actually,
that seems like a very easy thing that I'm surprised you hadn't thought of yet.
We get a lot of guests. But here's the thing. We might take some of our conversation and just package that and put it on.
Oh, you definitely should do that. Yeah. But I feel like you were such a big fanboy. The opportunity to get her back.
You know what blew me? 20 books. That's sort of an amazing thing. But she's busy. She does a lot of stuff. She's very active, and she's endorsing products and working with nurseries and now building a greenhouse, which I can certainly help her with. That's a fun life. And could you tell we were geeking out? Like, because I could recognize the plant she's talking about, and I just love that.
I'm not elevated to that.
You'll
I'm
get
not
there, though.
Yet, as far as like knowing the names
of
all these
things. I'll give you some love, though. Astilbe, you knew what that was because you looked for it.
Well, it's also because Debbie Bry was like, I think these would do well in your yard.
Yeah, because you're
and now
shade.
And so now I know. Yeah, now I know what those are.
But
there's
don't
a
make,
lot of
don't make
like
the
there's
mistake.
A lot of
annual
things in my yard that I, especially some of the random native plants that I just bought at a native plant sale. And I was like, I don't know what these are. So like I'm still not to the level where it's like I can look at a plant. And I'm like, oh, that's a yada yada yada.
Yeah, that's a lungwort. You
sure.
know. Yeah. I know
marigolds. I know impatiens. I know.
You'll get there.
Coleus.
That's what I used to
know. Roses, obviously.
Now, here's the thing. Do you have any geraniums on your property?
No.
There's nothing more bold. You know, you have to find a spot on your property that has a little bit of sun than a red geranium in a big pot. It looks spectacular.
Oh.
I learned this because I have a bench, an old bench that I built 30 years ago that's still in good shape. And I placed three large pots with three red geraniums on it. I love looking at that every time I go outside.
Okay.
It makes a statement.
And we know I'm all about making a statement.
Well, somebody, by the way, asked if you would share pictures of your before.
I'm going to put it in the newsletter.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll put the before and after in the newsletter.
It is a very unique design, but you took the best ideas from different people on, what is it, Pinterest?
Pinterest.
And, I mean, the work that you did, that's a hell of a lot of work. And I'm so proud of you because I have played a literal role. I gave you a couple plants. I gave you a couple planters.
Give some advice.
Advice? Because you learn. You learn stuff over. I'm much older than you if you don't know that. Audience, I'm much older than Kristen. But you share knowledge, and that's the cool thing about gardening and landscaping. So check out.
You also built my flower boxes that are on the outside of the house.
With recycled wood from another project, which I just did a project for my grandkids.
Did you, little hippie. Recycling.
I should grow my hair out and get a pony. All right, we got to go. Fun show today. We'll do it again tomorrow on 620 WTMJ.